Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. Jen app is launching. Oh my gosh, I am so excited. You can now sign up for the wait list for the brand new beautiful Jen app. Now, I had resistance when it was like just Jen, but think of it that like your Alexa, like it's just the place that you know you're going to receive the help in your body that's really going to be a game changer, because this is going to be different than anything you've seen of my programs. It's where you can actually come in, like find what you need exactly for your problem areas, self-assess those problem areas to find out and learn about your body, get content that's just curated exactly for you so you don't have to scroll through my social media, so you don't have to figure it out yourself. It is there for you. We are providing it in a way that it's just so attainable. And we've been doing so much work and we're going to continue to do work. But in the meantime, we want you to join the waitlist so that you could be the first person to get in to try this out and to really see how it can work for your body. So click the link below in the show notes. Please go to jen.health. Jen.health. That's it. No.com, no nothing else. Jen.health. Sign up and join the waitlist. It's super easy, quick. You just put in your number, you get a code, and you'll be in. And that's it. I cannot tell you how excited I am. We've been working for almost a year on this to really bring it to fruition. And it's here. It's coming. So go get it. Jen.health. Join the wait list. So excited.
Welcome back. Excited to have you here again. We're talking about arthritis.
Excited to have me here?
Maybe everyone else, but also you, babe.
Hey, this wouldn't happen without me.
Okay. Anyways, arthritis. We're talking about, you know, all the different forms and types of arthritis. And we get a lot of questions about arthritis in general and what you can do about it. So I think if we just start dissecting the different types first, then we're going to dive into what you can do and how we kind of approach arthritis.
Yeah, even just so we can start to understand a little bit more what people mean when they say, oh, I have arthritis, or I've got that arthritis, or, oh, doctor said I've been dealing with bone on bone, or I feel like it's something we just hear thrown around a lot. There are a lot of different types of it, so different people can be talking about arthritis or their arthritis, and they might be meaning something completely different than what we generally think about. So why don't we dive into some of the most common forms, or all of the different forms that we're just going to breeze over quick. I mean, yeah. I think some that, should we start with
arthritis first?
True. What is arthritis? So arthritis, the word itself literally just means joint inflammation.
Yep.
Like arthro means joint, inflammation, itis. So arthritis means some sort of inflammation in a joint. So if generally, we'll just like associate this word arthritis with when we have a painful joint.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a scary term for a lot of people. Like once you hear the diagnosis from your doctor, you have arthritis, it becomes a scary thing. And we want to first start off with saying it doesn't have to be. In a lot of ways, because it is something that starts to develop over time, it could, you know, start naturally in a lot of the joints.
It's a progressive thing, so...
Yeah. So is it part of the normal aging process then? Is it something that's going to happen? Does it have to be something we fear, and can we move with it with having arthritis in our lives? And in short, yes. So we want to dissect what this is and just start with that main point first, right? Arthritis is common. Arthritis is something that happens within the body as we start to move through life. So how can we start to combat some of that inflammation in general? And that's what we're going to hit on at the end. But don't be too afraid of that diagnosis that you receive. It doesn't have to be an end result of movement. It doesn't have to be something scary.
And I mean, like you said, it's something that's very common. And arthritis in general is one of the most common things we see orthopedically, or having to do with our physical body, especially as we age. Mm-hmm. And like you said, there is a natural amount of wear and tear that we're going to put on our bodies as humans, especially as humans that you know, throughout history have continued to live longer and longer and use our joints in more and more different ways.
Yeah.
And now we're having all these special ways that we can test and image our body and see, oh, you're showing some wear and tear. You're showing some early signs of arthritis.
Yeah.
And when you start to tell somebody who might be in their 40s or might be in their, you know, quote, earlier in life that they you're already starting to have arthritis, it is that fear-based thing that starts to creep in, just like, holy crap, I'm only 40 and I'm already having this thing that, again, when you hear arthritis, like, oh, that's something that older people get. That's something that is going to progress and keep getting worse, right? So I think removing some of that fear away from this, quote, diagnosis of arthritis, that using it as like this death sentence. Oh, my movement's just going to keep getting more and more painful throughout life.
Yeah,
that doesn't have to be the case.
100%. So let's start looking at different forms of arthritis. And I think one of the main forms that a lot of people hear or get diagnosed with is osteoarthritis.
Yep.
So happening within the bone, wear and tear. A lot of, you know, oh, I have bone on bone within my knee. So now I can't do certain, I can't run, I can't do this, I can't do that. You know, we start to develop these different things within our mindset based on the diagnosis that we receive.
And that's definitely going to be one of the most common forms overall of arthritis, which is seen as kind of that wear and tear, like, or if there were some sort of mechanical injury, like you had a meniscal tear, you know, that's something that might progress to a secondary osteoarthritis just from like the mechanical tissues not having, quote, as much cushioning and that type of thing. And that's where we'll start to see those degenerative changes of different bone growth as that progresses and stuff. So seen more as like the mechanical wear and tear type of arthritis.
Right. But again, wear and tear is not a bad thing. It's not a bad term. It is actually just part of our aging process. We use our tissues. And as we use our tissues, we're going to start to develop different phases of how they progress and how they are worn on each other. And so it's not a bad thing. You can still, maybe it looks a little different in running or working out, but you can still move with this. And we did a whole podcast episode not too long ago, actually, on osteoarthritis. So if this is your specific diagnosis, I really recommend going and listening to that podcast because we go over so much more. We go over a lot of studies, we go a lot of the research and stuff of what you can do for osteoarthritis.
And I think that, again, it's important to talk about this because we're seeing this more and more with different types of joint replacements, you know, with people who are wanting to go in different routes. And it's tough to, again, we're going to talk about all these different types of arthritis. So we're not going to try and dump on, okay, here's what you should do in each individual case. But I think it's more important for us to start talking about this because the rate of this arthritis or this bone-on-bone osteoarthritis that we see doesn't have to equate to our degree of functionality or the degree of pain that we're having. And we talk a lot about that in that osteoarthritis episode. We specifically do, I think we're talking more about the knee in that.
Yeah, like we talk about the knee a lot.
The knee. But again, this osteoarthritis isn't specific to the knee. It can happen
hip,
shoulder, any joint in the body, really.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually remember when our friend Aaron Alexander, we haven't had him on the podcast yet, but when he was writing his book, I remember him specifically talking to me about a research article that he had come across in terms of realizing that people in other countries that had different religious practices and would go to the floor more often throughout the day to pray. So they got all the way down into like a child's pose position or putting their hips in full flexion and then coming and standing back up and doing that multiple times throughout the day. They actually reported less occurrence of osteoarthritis within the hip than, say, in your traditional American culture where we're sitting in chairs, sitting at desks, sitting and standing rather than putting our joint in that full range of motion throughout the day. So it was interesting to see, okay, maybe if we just move more, we might have less occurrence of this actually happening.
Yeah, one little anecdotal example of where movement just seemed to help the pain overall. And I think that that's, again, talking about osteoarthritis, something that we see in the evidence is that moving, keeping the joint strong is going to be one of the best things for the symptoms and then the function.
Yeah.
And so if we move into another form of arthritis, there's one that's we'll hear called spondylitis.
Yeah.
Or ankylosing spondylitis would even be more of like an advanced version of that. Spondylitis, if we kind of imagine that as an arthritis of the back, it's more specifically focusing on the back or that core canister, kind of from our pelvis all the way up to our shoulder girdle, right? And essentially, it's just saying that we're feeling a lot more stiffness around the back, might more specifically start in the low back, but this spondylitis type of arthritis, kind of like a wear and tear arthritis of the back more specifically.
Yeah. So again, it's part of the aging process. It is like saying you have DDD, degenerative disc disease. You know, it is something that is so common, especially as we start to get older. So if you're getting these reports on the MRI, it is not bad. You're not alone. And there's some people who never get that MRI who also have that that diagnosis, who also are dealing with spondylitis. So ultimately, itis, again, we're talking about inflammation at the back. So what can we do to help keep the back healthy and start to prevent this from coming in as a later age, or prevent the pain that might be associated with that, is constant movement. How often are you moving through the spine? Are we only holding neutral spine? Are we only rounding and sitting at a desk? Are we only doing certain movements? Or are we getting an array of rotation, extension, flexion, movement of the spine? Movement of the spine is what's going to keep it healthy and young.
Totally. And that next advanced part, the ankylosing part of the spondylitis, is meaning, like, again, in this mechanical form of arthritis, we get what are called osteophytes, or this growth of little bony nodules. Basically, like, if we put pressure on the bones, we have these little workers called osteoclasts and osteoblasts. They're basically the little workers in our body that clean up old bone and lay down new bone. And if we're getting a lot of different pressures in the back, they might be forming these new little osteophytic growths. And that's eventually where two of these vertebrae can have parts that kind of fuse together, or these little osteophytes will fuse together. So then we'll see some sort of fusing between vertebrae and our low back. And that's the more advanced ankylosing spondylitis.
Yeah. And so in that case, if we're getting fusion of the back, what can we do if we don't have as much mobility, right? Well, the only thing we can do is use the tendons and the muscles around to help support. So what do? We get strong. How do we get strong? We get strong in the things that don't cause pain.
Totally.
I mean, that is the most basic form and way of being able to explain it, right? Do the things that don't cause pain more often and get strong.
Totally. And if, you know, like you said, if we're having some fusing and maybe some segments that really aren't moving now, there are still ways to get that motion. There are still ways to find out how we can support that segment of the back without really continuing to just overdo it.
Right, exactly.
Or overstress a certain segment.
And working with the physical therapist to ensure that we're not just moving from one segment. We're not just, you know, only strengthening the back, but are we strengthening from our entire pillar, our shoulder, down to our pelvic floor? How is that all working together? How are our pressures from our breath affecting the way that we move? You know, like, we have to look at the full spectrum. And so working with a professional, whether that's a physical therapist or a personal trainer, like working with a good personal trainer who can get you strong and feeling good in your body, that is the goal.
They can help tell you those places to start. Should it be hip mobility that I'm starting with? Should it be core stability that I'm starting with? Upper back, am I doing some open book exercises? Am I doing some archers? Am I doing some other things to open up the chest? Like, where is it that I am putting the most stress on this back that is causing this type of compensation? And how can we become more aware of that? It's really all that we're looking at.
Yeah. And remember that core means your entire pillar as well.
Yes.
Right? We're not just talking about the six pack or the abs. We're talking, like, how do your shoulder blades stabilize while you're holding a plank too? You know, like, it all plays a role, and your core, your pillar works as we load and we lift weights. So lifting weights is super important to increasing that strength. Okay.
So now we're going to kind of turn out of talking about arthritis from, like, the wear and tear aspect into more of what might be seen as autoimmune. There are a lot of different types of autoimmune arthritises, or arthritises that may just happen as a result of other processes going on in our body, kind of like gout.
Yeah.
I mean, some people may have heard of an older person in their life or a grandparent or somebody getting gout, which is just this really, really painful, inflamed, hot joint. A lot of the times it'll happen in the big toe. That's mm-hmm. one of the most common places, but it can happen other places like ankles, knees, hands, fingers, stuff like that. And essentially, without getting too much into the weeds on this, there's urate, the stuff called urate that is formed from uric acid, and they will create these uric crystals in our joints. And they're just kind of these sharp little crystals that, again, then irritate the joint and cause really, really painful reactions.
Yeah. I mean, think about moving with a sharp thing within your joint. It's not going to feel so good,
not
right?
Not going to feel great. So this is kind of one of those unique ones that can still be fairly common, but not nearly as common as something like OA or osteoarthritis.
Right.
But just kind of a unique one where we have a lot of this extra uric acid floating around our system. There's certain reasons that might be happening. But again, then they form these uric crystals and cause a lot of pain.
Yeah. So then if we're looking at that kind of aspect, yes, we want to move within what we have the capacity to move. But at the same time, we then have to be looking at, okay, what's causing the increase of uric acid within my system?
Yeah.
And what foods am I consuming that can either help to reduce that or potentially even revert it?
Yeah. And a lot of it was food-based. The ones that they said were like precursors that had a lot of extra pyrene?
There was
an extra little
clearly we're not dietitians.
That was broken down into this uric acid that then would cause the crystal formation, but it was different foods like certain seafoods, certain organ meats.
Yeah.
Again, that might have a lot of this extra stuff in it. So certain things you might be able to take out of your diet that could help prevent that from happening.
Yeah, but working with a professional, whether it's a registered dietitian, a doctor, a functional medicine doctor, someone who's going to measure your levels. You have to obviously see what's measurable for you and then and then do what's needed for your own individual body. Starting to address it from more of a food standpoint, I think is going to, and then we never want to stop moving. I think that's what's super important. Like, yes, pain will happen. However, the more that we stop moving, the more that we're only going to progress what is happening within the body. So moving in what you can, moving in what you feel mm-hmm. comfortable with, right? Not pushing past pain necessarily, but bumping up next to it is going to be super important to just continue to help keep you healthy, at least in what you have available to you.
I'm glad you said that because we always, you know, we're shameless at hounding on the movement, saying you need to keep moving, you can't stop moving. We understand pain comes with some of these things and we aren't trying to be blind at all to the fact that some people are out there are in pain. And every time we tell people to keep moving, they just get angry at us like, well, you aren't feeling the pain that I'm feeling.
Right.
So we totally understand that's part of the component. Completely stopping the movement or almost getting to that point where we're guarding against it, that's where it can be a little more dangerous to us than helpful in calming things down.
Right.
There may be a way that we need to adjust our movement to get things to calm down. Just doesn't mean that we stop completely.
And then if we go into more of like a rheumatoid arthritis, right? That's a very popular one as well, mm-hmm. RA, and that can happen dispersely throughout the body as well. And we're talking about more so of like the inflammation now within the synovium, which is the fluid within the joint space. So, and again, RA can develop over time. It can also be related to an autoimmune reaction within the body. Yeah. So when we're handling rheumatoid arthritis, yes, again, we're moving into what we have the capacity and the ability to move. Mm-hmm. However, we also have to look at now how those effects happen from a systemic point of as well. So what foods am I putting in my body that can cause this autoimmune reaction? Which stressors am I putting? And we're going to talk about all of this a lot more at the end, but you know, when we're looking at RA, rather than just stopping the movement, we have to continue to move, but we also have to address the entire system.
And now understand, of course, anybody who has RA is going to be working with a team, right? You're going to have a rheumatologist. You're going to have maybe some sort of immunologist that's consulting on this case. A PT is going to be a part of your journey, though, and they very much so should be, again, to help address the movement component, to help address the environmental components on what else we can do to control some of those inflammatory processes in the body. But again, a PT should absolutely be a part of this discussion on how to best keep your body moving, functional, strong, right?
I mean, when we're talking about fluids in the body, how do we get fluids to move? Movement.
Move. Literally. You use our muscles. You know, every muscle in our body is like this active little pump
yeah.
that we have control over to help pump these fluids, to help pump blood, help pump our lymphatic fluid or our garbage system through our body. And again, the more that we get that to move, the more we might be clearing some of the gunk out, some of the inflammation out from these joints. Because like you said, RA, we're more or less, our body is attacking the synovium, the mm-hmm. lining of our joints, that long-term in our life can cause some different joint changes. You may have seen people who have RA, they get their fingers start to kind of drift towards their pinkies. And then we get what we call this ulnar drift of the fingers towards the pinky side. Mm-hmm. And so it can really kind of damage these joints long-term. But there are definitely things with the medical team that we can do to change things over our lifespan.
Yeah. And we also can develop it young in life. You can almost yeah. be, you know, as a child, you can have junior rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah.
I remember significantly in school, one of the women who came and spoke, she had junior rheumatoid arthritis. And at this point, she was, I think, in her early 20s, and she had already 6 surgeries that she had throughout wow. her entire body. Because like you said, it's going to ruin the joint. So if you've had this as a child, like, yes, we yeah. can get into points where we're not able to use those joints. And so she could literally bend her elbow to 90 degrees. That was like the most that she could bend her elbow.
Oh my goodness.
She could barely open her legs, like opening her, standing and opening her legs apart wasn't happening very far. And she talked about other things as well. However, she also said she walked every day. She did yoga. She did weight training. And, you know, she had a dog too that helped her to like be motivated to get out and to walk and to do all these things. And the more active that she was, the better she felt, even though she had surgeries, even though she had things, you know. And by far my favorite story that she told, especially because we were at Loma Linda, where it's like kind of a little bit more conservative. But she told a story where she went to a gynecologist. Her regular gynecologist was out, and the guy was like, okay, put your feet in the stirrups. And she's like, well, I can't do that. And he like backed up, and he was like, well, then what are we going to do? And she was like, I don't know. My boyfriend figures it out. It's my favorite story ever.
That's pretty funny. Good for her for saying that to a doctor. Seriously? Who's willing to give her a little cheek. But yeah, no, I think that's an amazing story. And I think one of the biggest points there is that she said she felt the best when she continued to keep herself active, when she continued to do the things that may be difficult, yes, but she noticed that if she didn't do them, things would get worse rather than getting better. Kind of to our point that if you are conscious and maybe have a PT or somebody kind of helping you out, figure out what movement works best for you, there are ways that whether you're dealing with a juvenile rheumatoid arthritis or even juvenile idiopathic arthritis, there's just kind of more, quote, normal versions of the wear and tear or joint pain that people will get before they're 16. Mm-hmm. And there might not be any exact like known reason why they're getting it, but that's another type of juvenile arthritis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also have psoriatic arthritis. So that's think of people who might have some skin problems, autoimmune issues that, you know, psoriasis that happens. Mm-hmm. And now psoriatic arthritis is now associated with the joint inflammation and pain that you're getting along with the skin issues.
Yeah. If people haven't or aren't familiar with psoriasis, it's more of like this skin disorder people will get. They'll get like really big patches of red, kind of bumpy skin. And sometimes it'll be like white and silvery, flaky and scaly on top. And this kind of this psoriatic or psoriasis type patch that you'll get. But then along with that, people might start feeling swelling of certain joints, which is more on this autoimmune side of arthritis, where we're then having our body attack the joint for some reason.
Mm-hmm. And then we have also reactive arthritis.
Yeah, reactive arthritis is one that, again, not as common, but it just kind of said if there is an infection or some sort of virus happening elsewhere in the body, we may get a reactive swelling of a joint. Not nearly as common. You sometimes will see it with different sexually transmitted infections or actually disorders of the eyeballs. You might see some reactive arthritis, but again, not nearly as common.
And I think the number one underlying thing that we're seeing across the board with all these arthritises, right, is that it's inflammation. It's mm-hmm. inflammation. Sometimes it's autoimmune, but sometimes it's associated with infection, with skin disease, with other things that are happening within the body, right? Or uric acid buildup. Like, what is happening systemically? And that's where it's the most important thing. So it's like, instead of asking, what do I do for my arthritis in my hip? What do I do for my arthritis in my low back? What
how
do
can
I do?
I change how the hip feels?
Yes. Yeah. Rather than that question, what if we stopped looking so locally at what you're, where you're feeling it, and started looking more systemically at what we could do with inflammation within our body as a whole? And that's really where we want to bring you back to. We've had guests on that work specifically with people who have autoimmune diseases. So you can listen back to their podcasts. They talk a lot about food and how that impacts the autoimmune response.
But even when I was looking at this, some things that came up as, quote, types of arthritis were things like lupus, things like fibromyalgia, where we're feeling joint pain. You're feeling joint swelling. You might even get joint swelling or inflammation, proper inflammation, actually. But again, it's like, what is causing that? And some of these other things like lupus, we had, what was her name? Dr. Goldner, who came on and talked about her journey with lupus. Again, how can we change what environment we're in so that we might change this inflammation inside the joint? She gave some great tidbits on how to affect that. But I think overall, there's so many global things we can do to affect our systemic inflammation. So why don't you give us one of your favorites?
Yeah. Well, one of my favorites, and something that we go back to time and time and time and time again, right, is the breath. Yeah. And because that affects neurologically how we're responding to our body, which can have a huge effect on the state that we're in within our body. And especially when we're talking about inflammation, it's quote unquote bad when it's chronic, right? So acute inflammation, not a bad thing. It happens. We go through it within our body. But it's when we're not able to get out of that inflammation in its continued state, right? So if we think about it too, if we're continuously running at a high sympathetic driven state of fight, flight, freeze all the time, I'm thinking about all the pressures, I'm stressed, I'm overworked, I'm overloaded, I'm constantly stressing my body at this really high level, you know, that's where the breath can come into play. If I absolutely just start to address how I'm breathing, it can change the state in which I'm in. And we did a whole podcast, episode 11. If you haven't listened to that, we've talked about it so many times. Please go and listen to episode 11.
Yeah. And just the understanding, once we realize and understand that our breath can really flip some pretty powerful things in our physiology, so many reasons to continue going back to that. Just kind of a brief explanation, our sympathetic system, we have this fight, flight, freeze, this sympathetic system that you kind of pointed out, versus this parasympathetic system, which is this rest and digest. And again, if we're walking around all day and having pain, it's going to be hard for us not to be kind of living in that fight or flight system and taking short, shallow breaths up into our chest rather than the flip side, which is taking nice, long exhales, trying to really breathe with good core support, our whole core canister from our pelvic floor to our diaphragm and all the way around. That's really going to help us, just by breathing differently, pump less inflammatory signals into our system, like cytokine or histamine or cortisol. Those are all these hormones that are going to cause a little bit more of that inflammatory stress in our body.
And when we get back to a different type of breath, that slow, relaxed breathing, we absolutely not only flip, you know, what hormones are getting activated and what processes we're going into, but now I can relax my blood vessels, open up, cause some dilation, cause some things to flow better.
Maybe relax the muscles a little.
Relax the muscles, get my fluids to move rather than building up, which can help to reduce some inflammation within the body. So breath work, I still get DMs and comments today that the number one thing that helped me, you know, relieve my low back pain, relieve this, relieve that, is focusing on the breath. When I did that, everything flipped.
Well, it's just all the studies that come out these days saying, like, 10 minutes of conscious breath work a day can help benefit with this, or 10 minutes of meditation a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, really conscious breath work, I would almost equate to spending good time in a meditative state.
100%.
Someone could try and argue that on me, and I'm sure there's different nuances to, yeah, you know, meditation and breath work, but the benefit of what it can do for our body, the benefit of what 10 minutes of mindful breath work can do to our anxiety levels, our inflammatory levels, is really incredible. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me when I hear that breath work cures all.
I know, right? And we're not saying it does, but it's just something to continue to lean into, learn different forms, see what works for you. There's no one type of breath work. Yeah. There's lots of different types. So you don't have to get scared like, oh, I don't want to do the crazy Wim Hof. Listen, I don't always like to do that as well. So yeah, there's different types of breath practices. And it's about discovering what works and feels best within your body that actually creates long-term change. And you have to do it consistently, yeah, to make that long-term change. Sorry, it's not just a one-time thing.
You bring up Wim Hof, and that's a good transition to move from breath work into something else that can affect the inflammation or affect the physiology in our body, which is different types of cold training and different, mm-hmm, types of hot training, or using different therapies like cold and hot therapy, which we did episodes on cold therapies and on hot therapies. Not sure exactly the numbers.
Nope, but go back and look for it.
Go back and check those out. Because again, how we use cold and hot applications can really impact our physiology. And yep, the episode we did on cold was a lot on RICE, or the rest, ice, compress, elevate theory of how we use ice. And we point out how it's more of a peace and love approach.
Yeah. So go listen to find out what that means.
To find out what peace and love means. Because again, it's about using the inflammation to our advantage and controlling it so we're not just having consistent, uncontrolled inflammation. Yeah. We're using it to benefit our healing, and we're using it to our body's advantage.
Yeah. And looking at it from that systemic rather than just that local. So we do that with the heat episode as well, rather than just, okay, how does the hot pack affect me? And we talk about that. Yeah. But then we also go, okay, how does a sauna affect me? Right. Yeah. How does putting my entire body, does that change what's happening internally? And guess what? It does. So listen back to those episodes.
Same with an ice pack on, yep, the skin versus getting in a full ice bath.
Yep.
And again, everyone thinks the Wim Hof method can be crazy, but that alone, I mean, he has countless and countless anecdotal evidence of people saying like, this significantly helped, or quote, cured my rheumatoid arthritis or my psoriasis or different autoimmune type disorders, that people are like, how is he doing this? Oh, they're using the breath, they're using the cold to tap into our nervous system in a way that we may not have before. Mm-hmm. And I'm not here to say like, yes, the breathing can help you cure this or that, or can't help you cure this or that. I'm saying there's lots of people out there saying, I have harnessed the power of my breath and of cold to really impact the symptoms I felt at one point in life. And I believe that people make those changes for sure.
Yeah, totally. You got to just continue to explore and see what works for you. And other places to continue to explore is looking at your stressors. So whether that's journaling, whether that's talking with a therapist, whether that's doing something to address and just even bring awareness. When am I most stressed? A lot of times we're not even aware of it, right? I'm not stressed. I'm just doing this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And all of a sudden you're going through.
All good things.
Yeah. All of a sudden you're going through your day realizing like, oh my gosh, maybe I am holding on to a lot of stress and I'm not even acknowledging. And even just that practice of acknowledging and bringing awareness can be huge.
Yeah, it gives you an excuse to just sit there and do nothing for a day, right?
That sometimes. Whatever.
Honesty can sometimes be the most calming thing to your system. If you feel like you don't have a day to sit down and just like sit still and relax, and you do that for yourself, it can make some significant changes for you.
The allowance of not having to be in the go, go, go. Like that is an okay thing.
Constant need to perform. Totally.
Yeah. It's huge. Also bleeding into then community. Who do you have around you? Mm. Can you even talk about when you feel stressed, when you feel upset, when you feel vulnerable about whatever's happening in life? Do you have those people that you can go to? I think that is a huge response in inflammation within the body.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when dealing with pain, especially how our identity and our connection with pain and how we move and who we spend time with, they're all so intertwined. And so if we're having any major difficulties with one thing, like our knees hurting, that's probably playing in somewhere else in our life if that's a daily thing. Mm-hmm. And that can be really, really frustrating. And if you don't feel like you have a community that can chat with you about that, that can just field your frustrations. If nothing else, that can be really tough. So at least having those people that you can chat with, unload on, dissect your situation and figure out where you can go next, whether that's a PT, whether that's a best friend, whether that's a partner, a family member, there's got to be somebody out there that you feel like you can go to.
Yeah. So where do you dive in past those superficial relationships, right? Past the day-to-day of like, how are you? But like, really, how are you?
Yeah.
Like, really. I think that's super important. Even at just acknowledging if you've done that lately or not.
And that's where, you know, movement can really help with that community bit. You know, if there is a lack of movement or if you feel like there needs to be, you know, an injection of movement in your life, that's a great place to find the community, whether mm-hmm. it is a PT or a professional that can be kind of that accountability and that encourager up front that then helps you grow a great rehab community of maybe other people going through similar things.
Yeah. Or like maybe you're just asking a friend, okay, let's walk 3 times a week together. Mm-hmm. Movement is time and time again. We have countless studies that show that movement reduces inflammation. So it doesn't have to be a crazy HIIT workout every time. It doesn't have to be a crazy strength session every time. But movement is going to help. So find the things that you can do that that don't cause a lot of pain and keep doing those.
And just kind of rounding out with one of the things that, of course, can impact internal inflammation, what's happening in our body is our food and what we eat. And again, how our body takes in and processes that. And so that's somewhere where, again, with the medicine team, whether you're able to see a functional medicine doc, or even if you're seeing a more traditional MD, just being able to ask the questions of, hey, is there anything I can do to just reduce my internal systemic inflammation? You know, maybe you have some recommendations on what I can do with my diet or things I can take in every day, drinking more water. Even if you aren't able to see a functional medicine doc, your MD should be able to give you some recommendations on things you can do yourself, behaviors you can take up that might help with your internal inflammation. Again, all doctors should know some sort of recommendations on that.
They should. I mean, I will say that my cousin was going through an experience and needed to lower her inflammation and didn't get support from the RD at the hospital or her MD. And so, but guess what? She looked at people who were online, who were giving information for free and started using some of that information. People that she looked at was like Dr. Mark Hyman. He's got books. He's got tons of free resources of how you can start to address what's happening internally. Tyler Jean, who we've had on the podcast, he's Functional Foods on Instagram. If you want to look at his, you know, he gives so much help and free information on what you can start doing.
Dr. Brighton's good to look at. Brighton.
I mean, this is stuff that she was looking at and she helped impact her body's own inflammation by using these free resources online. So even if you feel like you don't have support from an MD, there's so much support around you. Listen to some of our podcasts. We've had some great people on that talk about food and diet and the way that affects that internal environment.
Yeah. And I mean, the online space can be a little bit of a cesspool of information sometimes.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to trust always what you're getting, but we'll tell you that the people that we have through here, we definitely trust as far as what we've heard from them thus far. And so we'll always try to bring people to you that can be trustworthy sources of information online.
Yeah, definitely. So hopefully that helps to give a little idea of how to start to address your arthritis. There's no one movement. There's no one thing.
No.
Explore and see what works for you.
And it brings up just a couple more ways to understand what arthritis is. There's such a broad spectrum of what it means. If you've ever been told, hey, you have it, you have this or that, you land somewhere on the spectrum. And that doesn't mean we can't impact the way that we feel and the way that you function through life. And there you have it, your quick overview on arthritis and the difference between some of the types. I hope you learned something. If you did, please go rate, review, or share it out with a friend. Share it with somebody who you think might benefit from this. That's really the best way to get this information into the hands of more people so we can all still continue to grow into our optimal body.